마음을 기다리는 것이야. 하나님도 나설까요? 적수 있으면 탄생의 테스마의 세계를 내놔. 주의 제이타님으로 비슷하면서도 피통되는 것들에 사형, 바가다마형, 나라티사, 판단티카, 망세코, 포티비스차, 쿠패슨, 누피비스차, 페티트룸, 브라미니비로, 말씀해주는 것. In the past time, telling Sanskrit word for past time is lila, which is different from a story, because the word story somehow implies that it is coming from the imagination, but the Bhagavatam is accepted as authoritative. Coming from imagination, coming from depth of realization. And in this pastime, Lord Brahma has gotten a glimpse from a distance, a glimpse of some of the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because how can you grasp with limited intelligence the unlimited? How could the limited grasp the unlimited? How can a cup of water understand the size of the ocean? It can only hold such a little amount compared to the ocean. Similarly, even though Brahma means literally the greatest, the great one, and he is an empowered personality of greatness, for in the engineering feat, universal engineering feat, he's empowered by the grace of the potency of Krishna to assist in the creation of the universe. So he's so, when one looks at the complexities of the universe, we can see that there's so much intelligence behind it, vast intelligence. Just even the shoulder muscle or the foot is so complex. There are so many bones in one foot, and there's so many tendons and cartilages. And if one becomes a little bit stretched or too tight, then even walking is difficult. And this is just in the foot, and the way it's just engineered perfectly so that its purpose can be effected. So there's so, and that's just one foot in a human being. And then you go on the, you look at that same foot on a different level, on a cellular level, on the level of biology, and then it's even more complex how the cells work and how they reproduce using the DNA and RNA and the proteins. Practically speaking, the greatest intelligences in this world that can't understand how things are working, that can't understand how the protein molecules replicate themselves using DNA and RNA. No one can understand these things. And Brahma, he is the engineer of not only one foot and on the cellular level, but also on the universal macrocosmic level as well. And he's unlimitedly powerful, how everything is just so balanced. And although we tend, as human beings, having a better way to do everything than the natural way, we tend to throw things out of balance, but in and of itself, things are quite balanced. So this extremely intelligent engineer, Lord Brahma, he tried to understand something, he wanted to find out something about the potency of the unlimited Supreme Lord. And the result was that he got a glimpse of that potency by the grace of Krishna. And that glimpse was so overwhelming. A glimpse means he saw it from a distance and saw that it was so many, that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, was so many countless times more powerful than him that he could estimate, that he was just shocked and stunned. He could not complete his estimation, but he was he became overwhelmed, practically speaking. Just like when one confronts some great power, whether it's in the world or the great power of death or the great power of vast mountains, there's a feeling of awe that enters the consciousness, and it affects one physically. And so Brahma became stunned. He could not move when he got his glimpse of the Lord's power. And then he, when he opened his eyes again, he practically fainted. And when he opened his eyes, he saw Krishna. He saw the land of Vrindavan, the transcendental land in which Krishna plays, where he performs his leelas, his pastimes. Which people have such a vague idea of the Supreme Lord, and what Prabhupada was very insistent upon, very forceful about, following in the footsteps of his teacher, his Kumaraj, and following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to show how the Absolute is personal. The Absolute Truth, even though unlimited, is a person. Is a person. And this is very reassuring, because one of the aspects of a person is that every person has qualities. Do you know anyone who has no qualities? You can't even, how can the person be there if he has no qualities and characteristics? So one of the things that's reassuring is that Krishna is very compassionate. That's one of his qualities. And if the Absolute were impersonal, then he wouldn't have the capacity, he wouldn't have the quality of mercifulness. So that's one little aspect. And what to speak of the fact that we're so attracted to the things in this world, it would be impossible, practically actually speaking, to pull our mind from the things of this world to focus it on something without qualities. Of course, how could, you can't even say something, because something is a quality. So you can't even talk about an impersonal. You can't conceptualize it. So there's so many wonderful and reassuring things about the Supreme Lord being a person. And he is very beautiful. He is also wonderful. So Brahma, when he came out of his trance, his shock at getting a glimpse of what unlimited power is coming from a person. And we'll read the 62nd verse in Srila Prabhupada's comment, his purport. After seeing this, all the potencies in existence, all the aspects of material existence, we're all worshipping that Supreme Lord. That was one of the things he glimpsed. All the powers and elements that control us, such as time and the qualities of nature and our own personal interior natures, all these qualities, svabhava, karma, kala, they were all in persons also, and they were worshipping the Supreme Lord. They were worshipping Lord Vishnu. And he saw that every living entity in existence was worshipping that Supreme Lord, either directly or indirectly. So when Brahma opened his eyes, and after getting a glimpse of the power, he saw the source of that power, and it was even still more amazing. Because the source of that power was the most beautiful, effulgent, and sweet little boy. There's a few other devotees who had a glimpse like that. Markandeya Rishi, in the 12th canto, there's a long story about Markandeya Rishi's seeing the Supreme Lord, just a little boy floating on a banyan leaf. But yet he understood he was unlimited and that the universes were all, at the time of destruction, they were all wound up, as the term Prabhupada used. They all came inside of him. But he was in the form of a boy, a little boy, very little. And then also Akura, when he got a glimpse of the Vishnu, the all-powerful form of the Lord. And then when he came back to see Krishna, he looked so shocked because he had seen something so wonderful. I mean, it would be shocking to see, certainly to see unlimited, get a glimpse of unlimited power, because it's not only just like strength, but power has a particular energy about it. When one is in the presence of power, it's somewhat shocking. Even if you're in the presence of a powerful person, who is the most powerful person that you ever met? That's ridiculous. Poor Jimmy. You know, I'm talking about someone, you know, either a person of a very high position.
The vice president of a company, or the CEO of the company.
Still a little man, yes.
But like in terms of physical strength?
No. Your company is a little company.
Yeah.
It's not like the vice president of a country or something. So you met him, though. And when you... So he, is your company a little bit big?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the name of it?
Synergy.
So when you saw him, everyone was smiling at him and everything. And everyone was a little... Because everyone was a little bit afraid.
Yeah.
And this is just a little man who's temporarily in a little position that's bigger than the people who are still smaller. But when you're in touch with power, it does something. Who is the most powerful person you ever met? I mean, on the material level.
Met.
Yeah, in the presence of?
Doesn't the little
guy. You saw Sachin? Did you get his autograph?
No.
Oh. He's a Bombay boy.
But not powerful.
A nice fellow. He's little, yes. Not that little, but... But people go, oh, fainting everything.
Auntie with the sari running behind him.
Who?
Auntie with the sari running behind him for the autograph, too.
Oh, so many aunties.
Yeah.
Autograph the saris?
Yeah. With the sari, trying to run behind him for the autograph.
Oh, yeah.
It's very difficult to run with the sari.
I thought Sachin was running wearing a sari. And I thought they're very unusual.
There'll be comedy of errors.
Yes, certainly. But if someone like Sachin started running with a sari, the next day in India, all the cricket players would be running with a sari. But in any case, we're getting off the topic, aren't we? So Brahma, when he saw actually unlimitedly powerful, he got down from his swan carrier and he immediately fell down, dandavat. Vat means like, and danda means stick. So like a stick he fell down to the ground, like a golden rod, because he himself was effulgent and golden. And he touched the lotus feet of Krishna with the tips of the four crowns on his head. So he was so powerful, but when he glimpsed Krishna's power, he fell down to the ground. He was humble. Just naturally, when one comes in touch with power, and one glimpses power, one naturally becomes humble and feels one's own insignificance. Usually, as we go through life, we feel ourselves very significant, which just shows and important and more or less central in the universe, which of course is not true. But when, that is because we mostly associate with our own minds all day long. But if we were associating with God all day long, with Krishna, then we would naturally be humble. It's just completely natural, because we would be experiencing our own insignificance, our own infinitesimitude, something. So Brahma, seeing something about Krishna, fell down flat on the ground, with his whole body on the earth. So he was not just going like this, not just naturally, just automatically, he fell to the ground because he experienced humility. And then, offering his obeisances means full respect, he bathed the feet of Krishna with the water of his tears of joy. So why was he crying? Why was he crying out of joy? Because he had just seen the Supreme Person in existence, the source of everything. He was seeing him, and he had the opportunity to be in close contact with him. And Krishna had an exchange with him to teach him. So his heart melted, actually, and he bathed the feet of Krishna with the tears of joy from his eyes. His heart melted. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lord Brahma bowed down like a stick, and because Lord Brahma's complexion is golden, he appeared to be like a golden stick lying down before Lord Krishna. When one falls down before a superior, just like a stick, one's offering of obeisances is called dandavat. Danda means stick, and vat means like. It is not that one should simply say dandavat, because that's a custom in India. Say, oh, dandavat means I'm falling down like a stick, but before you, out of respect, offering respect, but you're still standing straight. Rather, one must fall down. Thus Brahma fell down, touching his forehead to the lotus feet of Krishna, and his crying in ecstasy is to be regarded as a bathing ceremony of Krishna's lotus feet. He who appeared before Brahma as a human child was in fact the absolute truth, Param Brahma, Prameti Paramatmati Bhagavaniti Sabhyate, from the first canto of the Bhagavatam. That the learned persons, Vedanti Tatva Vidas. How do you measure someone's learning? And who is actually learned and who is not learned? Because there are many so-called learned scholars, for instance, who are very arrogant, who are proud. So that means they're not in touch with the truth. The greatest, most intelligent persons, even among scientists, if one is a big scientist, one is naturally humble because he sees the vastness of reality, and he sees that his ability to understand it is very small. So Vedanti Tatva Vidas, those learned men, the actually learned, they have conceived of the absolute truth, Advaya Gyan. It is called in Sanskrit. Vedanti tatva vedas tatvam yad gyayam advayam. Advayam means the non-dual truth, the oneness of everything. And that non-dual truth, Tanti Tat, Tatvamidat, Tatvamgyanamadvam, Brahmeti, Paramatmakti, Bhagavaniti, Sabyate. According to the methodologies that they practice, these learned persons, they will realize that absolute truth in one out of three features. Just like a citizen, an ordinary citizen of the government in a city or a state, he realizes the government in the form of its power and all of its agencies. And he never, even though behind the government is the governor, he has no concept of the governor, but he just sees the power and he thinks the government is very powerful. Then so that's it for an ordinary person, ordinary good citizen. Then another person may be more qualified, and he's a servant of the governor. And he gets to see the governor sitting at his big, big office seat, and he gets to go on official occasions with him. And he addresses him in a very respectful way, and the governor may sometimes even smile at him, and he feels very satisfied. But he's clearly in his role as a subordinate. And then there are still others who have a very personal relationship with the governor, maybe his relatives, maybe his very close friends or most trusted advisors, or maybe the children, the his school friends, because even kings and governors at one time were little boys or girls. And they also went to school, and they had friends, and they used to play. So some of his friends from school, they still come and see him sometimes. And of course, they know he's the governor, but still, they have a very relaxed, friendly relationship with him. And they sometimes may tease each other and make jokes with each other. Well, the second person, the person who's serves the governor in a official capacity. He doesn't make jokes with the governor. He's very aware of his power and his own subordination. And the first person who just sees the potency of the governor in the form of his government, his well-managed government, he doesn't even really know the governor. He just knows the influence of the governor. So those three different aspects are called Brahman, and when in relationship to the Absolute Truth, are called Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman means the power, the oneness of everything. Paramatma means that the Supreme Lord is in everyone's heart, but he has qualities but doesn't exhibit personality. Just like the governor, when he's sitting at his desk, he's just in a very official mood, and he just does his business. And then the personal friendship, knowing that the person who is the governor in an intimate way, is Bhagavan realization. And that is the most wonderful in relationship to the Absolute Truth, because then you fully realize his unlimitedly wonderful personality as much as he reveals it to you. So Lord Brahma, in his form as a cowherd boy, the Supreme Lord is Narakriti, that is, he resembles a human being. It is not that he is four-armed Chaturbhuja. Narayan is Chaturbhuja, but the Supreme Person resembles a human being. So when the governor gets up from his governor's seat and goes into his private quarters and starts playing with his friend or his grandson or something, he looks like an ordinary person, but he's not an ordinary person. He's the governor, or maybe the king or the prime minister, but he looks like an ordinary person because he's doing what ordinary people do, but he still has all this power that at that particular moment he possesses that power, but he's not manifesting it. But at any time he can make some executive order or something like that. Because even though he looks like he's ordinary, he's riding a horse or whatever. But at any moment he can say something. and tens of people will abide by his order. So even though he's acting as if he's ordinary to ordinary eyes, he hasn't lost any of his power, his executive power, his power of office. So similarly, when Krishna is in Vrindavan, looking like an ordinary boy and acting like an ordinary boy, he still is all-powerful, as he showed to Brahma. So he resembles a human being. It is not that he is forearm. Narayan is tatabuha. But the Supreme Person resembles a human being. This is also confirmed in the Bible, where it is said that man was made in the image of God. So if we see that we look like something, we have everyone here has certain characteristics. So that means that the Supreme Lord will also have similar characteristics. So we have two arms, he has two arms. We have two legs, he has two legs. We have ears, everything, nose. But his are all unlimited, and they're of a different quality than ours. Our characteristics are under the control of the mode of nature. We don't control them, and the Supreme Lord, there's nothing controlling him. That's one of the definitions of the Supreme Lord. He's the Parameshwara. He's the supreme controller. So Lord Brahma, so what did he see? He saw that Krishna was standing before him looking as if an ordinary boy, but now Brahma, it was completely clear to him because he had seen with his own eyes, he had seen some of Krishna's power, and it was so the sum of Krishna's power, the small amount that he saw, was so far beyond his conception, ability to conceive of, that he knew that this boy was extraordinary. So Lord Brahma saw that Krishna, in his form as a cowherd boy, was Param Brahma, the supreme greatest. He was the root cause of everything, but was now appearing as a human child, loitering in Vrindavan with a morsel of food in his hand. Astonished, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier and let his body fall to the earth. Usually, the demigods never touch the ground, but Lord Brahma, voluntarily giving up his prestige as a demigod, bowed down on the ground before Krishna. Although Brahma has one head in each direction, he voluntarily brought all of his heads to the ground and touched Krishna's feet with the tips of his four helmets. Although his intelligence works in every direction, he surrendered everything before the boy Krishna. And this is the natural, this is natural, that one comes before the all-powerful, one naturally surrenders. Surrenders means acknowledges one's insignificance and tininess and places oneself at the mercy of the Lord, understanding oneself to be a servant. That's the natural condition of every living being, humble, naturally humble, naturally subordinate, naturally a servant. So what Prabhupada has taught us, what Mahaprabhu has taught us, that this jivera sarupoi krishna nitya das, this is who we are. Naturally, we are all naturally servants of the Supreme Lord. And now, instead of trying to act as servants, we are trying to all be masters and control and enjoy as much as we can according to a man's capacity or a woman's capacity. They grab a part of the earth, so to speak, whether it's if one's capacity is small, like a little animal, like the dogs, they have their yard and they bark at everyone because this is mine, this is my territory. And someone may have a house, or someone may have a part of a business, and he thinks he's the in charge of the business, the vice president of Synergy. Is that what? Synergy. And this is mine. And someone else may be so powerful, he has a country, And he's so attached to thinking this country is mine, and I'm the ruler, I'm the controller, and anyone who tries to disagree with me, I'll kill him even. Because this is mine, and I am the controller, and I am the Lord, and everything here is meant for my pleasure and enjoyment. So this is just the opposite of Brahma's mood. He actually was powerful, and everyone is usually imagining themselves as significant. Well, we're actually insignificant, but Brahma was actually significant. But when he came in touch with the Supreme Lord, he experienced his own insignificance. So that's completely natural, because we are insignificant. In 100 years from now, how many people will even... We won't be in this world. We won't be in this body, which we think of as us. Most of us probably won't be 100 years from now, even 70 years from now, or even 50 years from now. We're not going... Some of us, a few of us, will be hobbling around with our canes or whatever. But most of us won't be here. And then in 100 years from now, who will anyone even know that we existed? That's 100 years from now. It's not even so long. It's not even no one will even know that I existed. And here I am thinking myself very, 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 very important, when in fact I am very, very insignificant. So it is mentioned that Brahma washed the feet of Krishna with his tears. And here the word sujalai indicates that his tears were purified. As soon as bhakti, devotion, is present, everything is purified. Sarvapadiva mirnamuktam. Therefore, Brahma's crying was a form of bhaktyanubhav, a transformation of transcendental ecstatic love. So it came... Those tears came from his pure heart. His heart was pure because he was giving himself to the Lord. He was not thinking himself the supreme, the great enjoyer. He was not proud. He was accepted. He was humbly a servant, and he was respectful. So out of his pure heart came tears. And those tears bathed the feet of the Lord. Then the next verse describes his ecstasy, more about his ecstasy, what he was experiencing. Rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time. He got up, and then he would look at Krishna and fall to the ground again. And then he got up, and he would look and remember what he had just seen Krishna do. And he would fall to the ground again. And he did this again and again. He would fall to the feet of Krishna. For a long time this happened. Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. He was Prabhupada's purport. And stated in one prayer, Shritim apare smritim itare varatamane bhajan Tubhavavita Ahamiha Nandam Vande Yasyalande Parambrahma. That others study the Vedas, Smriti and Mahabharata, fearing material existence. But I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard is crawling the Supreme Brahman. Nanda Maharaj is so great that the Parambrahma is crawling in his yard, and therefore I shall worship him. So it was inconsistent or staggering that the unlimited supreme, there he was, a small boy, Krishna. Brahma was falling down in ecstasy, and because of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who exactly resembled the human child, Brahma was naturally astonished. Therefore, with a faltering voice, he offered prayers, understanding that here was the Supreme Person. There's your boss has a boss. What's his name, by the way?
Maria Marsh.
He's a she.
She.
Yeah, okay. and she has a boss. And does he have a boss? So she's a vice president, and she has a boss, and the boss is the president?
CEO.
And does he have a boss?
Is it
a public company?
He's answerable to the government, state government.
And the state government has a boss?
The federal government.
And the federal government has a boss? So everyone has a boss. Except Krishna. He doesn't have a boss. Of course, he's controlled by the love of his devotees. But there's no one more powerful than him. He's Savakar and the Parama Ishwara. Ishwara Parama Krishna. So then, rising very gradually, in wiping his two eyes, the Brahma looked up at Mukunda. Mukunda means he whose face blossoms like a jasmine flower. Or it also means Mukunda, the giver of liberation. So then Lord Brahma looked up at Krishna. He looked at him because he was on the ground. Even though Krishna was little, Brahma was on the ground. Lord Brahma, his head bent low out of humility, his mind concentrated, his body trembling in ecstasy, he very humbly began with faltering words, not sure of himself, he began to offer prayers, praise to Lord Krishna. Here's Prabhupada's short purport. And this was the last purport that Prabhupada dictated. In this world, Brahma, being very joyful, began to shed tears, and he washed the lotus feet of Krishna with his tears. Repeatedly he fell and rose as he recalled the wonderful activities of the Lord. After repeating obeisances for a long time, Brahma got up and smeared his hands over his eyes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that the word lotsane indicates that with his two hands he wiped the two eyes on each of his four faces. Seeing the Lord before him, Brahma began to offer prayers with great humility, respect, and attention. So that's in the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 10th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Stealing of the Boys and Calves by Brahma. And now Brahma, the next verse, which Krishna willing we will read tomorrow, talks the first of Brahma's words, what will come out of his mouth, out of his very eloquent and elegant mouth, what will come out of his mouth, something very deep and something very wonderful, because after all he's the most intelligent in the universe. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
We started the chat from this conversation. If Absolute was impersonal, then he won't be merciful. What does that mean?
Because impersonal means he doesn't have a personality. And it means also what makes a person have a person? What are the aspects of a person that make up his personality?
Quality and love.
There has to be something. He's either serious or funny, or you have to have some qualities or you're not a person. So if you have no qualities, if you're impersonal, it means you don't have any qualities. And since mercifulness is a quality, you wouldn't have the quality of mercifulness, of being merciful. That's what I meant.
If you're not
a person.
Yeah, if you're not a person.
If you're an imperson, of course you can't be an imperson, because if you were a you wouldn't be imperson. So when there's something impersonal, has no qualities, you can't even talk about it. You can't talk about it, you can't think about it, you can't conceive of it. You can't even say it's an it. You can't say it's a them. You can't say it's a her, a she, or what. You can't say anything because there's no qualities at all. But usually, spiritualists have an impersonal conception of the truth, of the absolute truth. Usually, spiritualists, transcendentalists or religionists, they're trying to move towards an impersonal
So that means realization, Brahma realization.
Yeah, that's what we call that.
Meditating.
On what? Meditating means your mind is focused on something and absorbed in it. But if you're focused on nothing, because it has no qualities, then first of all, it's going to be very difficult to meditate, because as soon as something happens, your mind will become distracted from whatever it's not doing. And anyway, why assume that the absolute truth has no qualities? Have we ever, is there anything that has no qualities? So it's not scientific, it's not anything. Even if you said that if it has a, by scientific study of the absolute truth, we have realized that it has no qualities, even if that's how you thought, but then that absolute truth would have the quality of being able to be realized by a scientific study of itself.
Yes.
So then it would have at least that quality. And then what would you be studying? There would be another quality, because then the studier and the, because you can't study nothing. Any other questions or comments?
It's an interesting
This
comment that Prabhupada made. Bhakti is present, everything becomes purified. In relationship to the tears in Pramaha.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point. So in Krishna consciousness, a devotee, someone who has devotion, is bhakti. So he's still a person, he still has qualities, he still acts in this way, he still acts in that way. He still does so many things, but they're all purified because of his devotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful concept. Okay, so Gopal, how are you today? Did you go to work today? Tomorrow? What time?
Finish at 6.
In the evening. Do you have to work all night sometimes? Do you like working at night?
No.
Why?
I can sleep at night.
Why? Well, everyone likes to sleep at night. Why?
It's natural.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll stop then. Thank you.
Thanks.